A new book about the culinary revolution in America begins with this sentence. In the restaurant business, there are no tomorrows. The author, Patrick Q, goes on to say that restaurants are always about right here, right now. Q knows this firsthand. He's not only a food writer, but trained as a chef in Paris and cooked in some of the top restaurants in the U.S. NPR's special correspondent Susan Stamberg reports.
Patrick Q's book is called The Last Days of Haute Cuisine. In it, Mr. Q, his name is spelled K-U-H, explores the rise and fall of fine and Frenchified cooking in this country. His story of the culinary revolution in America begins at the 1939 World's Fair. France brought something pretty special to that fair.
They brought a restaurant, and a restaurant of the highest standard of French cooking. In the first month, they fed 18,000 people.
Voila, the American masses meet the food of the elite, and they like what they taste. The manager of that restaurant, Henri Soulet, decides to open his own place in the U.S. In 1941, in New York, Le Pavillon had all the trappings, gilded chairs, crystal chandeliers.
Christophe silver, the best silver in France. There were tapestries, there were murals.
And the food. Henri Soulet fed wealthy patrons as if they were dining at Baron Rothschild's chateau. Caviar, chicken braised in champagne, truffled eggs in aspic. Patrick Q's theory in The Last Days of Haute Cuisine is that every decade has one restaurant that epitomizes the times. Through the 40s and 50s, Soulet's cooking spawned dozens of wannabes, and French restaurants here became over-gilded, over-sauced, and over-flambéed. Then, in 1959, a restaurateur named Joe Baum opened a place in Manhattan that marked the beginning of the end of haute cuisine in America. The Four Seasons was the first great un-French restaurant in the country, quite deliberately.
They were very conscious that they didn't want to be French. Joe Baum said it would have been very easy to hire a French chef, bring him over at a huge price, and do it all over again. But they said, we are Americans. And the restaurant is in the Seagram Building, designed by Mies van der Rohe. It's on Park Avenue. Let's not pretend that we're at the Rothschilds.
The Four Seasons served rustic food. Amish ham, white beans, smoked rack of lamb, wonderfully prepared, a new kind of American cuisine. The next landmark on America's culinary horizon is named Julia Child. More than 6 feet tall, with a voice that could revive a dead Brussels sprout, in 1963, on television, Julia Child begins showing Americans how to cook Frenchly at home.
French bread, like Gaul itself, is divided into three parts. You have the making of the dough, then you have the forming of the loaves, and finally, the baking.
She very much demystified haute cuisine for Americans, very unpretentious, about a subject around which there was so much pretension, and it really brought it home to Americans. This is something that we can do, something we can eat. We don't have to be intimidated. She was marvelous.
Still is. Julia Child dominates food in the 1960s. Then in the 70s, the focus shifts west, and a little restaurant on Shattuck Avenue in Berkeley becomes the next stop on the path away from haute cuisine. Chez Panisse has a French name and French roots, but its creators were American food amateurs.
Because they'd had no professional training, they really relied on cookbooks. And once they found an author, they really mined that author completely.
Following the written recipes of Elizabeth David, Richard Olney, Chez Panisse founder Alice Waters and chef Jeremiah Towers invent California cuisine. The simplest, freshest ingredients, some grown especially for the restaurant. A menu in English, no haute, anything. And everything local. Tamales Bay Blue Point oysters, Big Sur smoked trout, Monterey Bay prawns sautéed with garlic, parsley, butter. They approached California like a region of France, looked for local specialties, and served them. And of course, California wines. The 1980s also belonged to California, writer Patrick Q says, but Southern California. There, in 1982, Wolfgang Puck takes the next revolutionary step away from haute cuisine. Puck had all the classic training. He'd worked at Maxim's in Paris, but in West Hollywood, at Spago, Wolfgang Puck de-emphasized that most basic and glorious French staple, sauce.
The image of the restaurant was not going to be a sauce restaurant. What he chose instead to be the image completely confronted gastronomy with all its elitist principles, and it was a pizza.
Yeah, but some pizza. Spago pizzas have smoked salmon or chicken and cilantro, wood-fired, pricey, made by a star chef. And the hip, hit restaurants keep coming. In the last 30 years, we have gone from steak and potatoes to grated fresh ginger and chipotle and rice noodles. There's been an explosion in American cuisine. Some food fans believe the best cooking in the world is here, not in France or Italy or Asia. Patrick Q says it's because we have the foods of so many different cultures to play with, and we love the game.
I think that in the United States, what's marvelous is that there aren't the constraints of other countries. We come to cooking fresh, and we come to cooking curious. That's talking for the cooks, and that's talking for the clients. And those are the conditions that really make for a rich restaurant scene. If the clients don't come in, sit down, and eat, as MFK Fisher said, with a bold knife and fork, there's no point to it. The American clientele, I would definitely say, is the most curious in the world.
Patrick Q, his book is called The Last Days of Haute Cuisine, America's Culinary Revolution. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News, Washington, where you still can't get a decent corned beef sandwich.